with the talk, the basics, excuse me, obstacles to the realization of unity.
Obstacles to the realization of unity. Let's examine the title of today's topic so we can get a better understanding of its meaning. First off, we have the word unity. Cambridge Dictionary defines unity as the condition of being one, oneness, singleness, singularity, and having a harmonious mutual understanding. That sounds a lot like the never-ending quest for universality of all. Or, as the first object of theosophy puts it, to form the nucleus of universal brotherhood of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, caste, or color. The second key word in that title is obstacle. Using the same dictionary, obstacle is defined as follows: anything that blocks you so that movement going forward or any action is prevented or made more difficult. We now know that the title asks us to realize what prevents us, the human race, from achieving a harmonious oneness or universal brotherhood among men and women. What blocks us from realizing that we are all members of one human family? Most people wish to banish hostility and to usher in an era of friendship. Yet rivalry and hatred perpetrate hard feelings which separate man from man. Many believe in and talk about brotherhood, but we see everything and everywhere the failure of unity and harmony. So what are the obstacles of humanity, of this oneness? Well, there are four major groups. They are in no particular order. Conditions are class, prejudices, identifying with the personality, and limited ideas. Of course, encapsulated among these are those mentioned in the first object: race, creed, sex, caste, and color. One of the greatest obstacles to unity has been religious differences. There has been no greater impediment since the commencement of the Christian era. Before this period, there was no such opposition as there has been since. To go no further back than the Roman Empire, an organization of various tribes, all in a single state. The gods of other religions and nations were adopted, and the religions of subjected nations were recognized. Most religions have checked unity and rendered impossible the unification of mankind. They have led to the systematic growth of individualism as opposed to uniting mankind. The fundamental idea of salvation is a conception more opposed than any other to solidarity of the race. Now, lately, as dogmatic religion has lost its hold on the Western mind, we have witnessed an enormous growth of materialism, which is another tremendous obstacle. The ancient conception, the ancient conception was that each nation had a right to its own religion. No religion was believed to be any superior to any other. All religions were acknowledged to be forms of one and the same truth. Plato and Pythagoras studied under Egyptian priests. Apollonius of Tyana was introduced and instructed by Brahmins of India. All thoughtful men recognize the idea that the gods were various conceptions of facts in nature. The spirit and growth of materialism, as mentioned previously, is opposed to unity of all because its whole tendency is centralization upon self, with no larger or more permanent hope, no future, no punishment, no reward. The tendency is to live for the moment only, increasing the growth of selfishness and individualism. The history of the last century is a demonstration of this statement. Though men are often better than their beliefs. But ambition and a desire for power is an inherent idea in human nature. And if the struggle for existence is removed, it does not remove selfishness. Even though the churches today have given up burning people at the stake, they certainly have not given up or abandoned separateness and social ostracism. At this point, we could take a look at the other objects of theosophy and how they relate to other obstacles. But with limited time, let's just inspect the second fundamental proposition, the absolute universality of that law of periodicity, of flux and reflux, ebb and flow. Also, we can say that this is cause and effect, which we all know is the doctrine of karma. The doctrine of karma serves as the strongest incentive and untiring effort, for this law is simply the law of cause and effect on the moral and spiritual planes of nature and runs through all lives and connects them, so that absolutely what a man sows, that also shall he reap. This is an immutable law, and in connection with reincarnation, its sister doctrine, explain the apparent injustice and inequalities which prevail in life. The conception of karma renders a man self-reliant and self-dependent because it teaches that he is what he has made himself by his own actions in other lives, and that his present acts determine his future. In this, you see, there is no room for vicarious atonement or a deathbed escape from the consequence of one's own actions, be they good or evil. Absolute justice is the keynote of nature. If this is not a superior precept to the obstacle called the doctrine of vicarious atonement, we have mistaken the truth. For we believe that more good will result to the human race from the eradication of this erroneous conception that can be readily conceived. More harm has been done by causing men to believe that they can escape from the consequences of their own acts by shifting these consequences onto the shoulder of another being than from any other single source. This idea weakens and demoralizes men, enfeebles their sense of personal responsibility, and holds out delusive hopes of escape from the operations of the laws of nature. Additionally, the idea of one life to live being taught from such an early age is so poisonous to spiritual, emotional, physical, and psychological development and progress through this present human journey. This is such a toxic teaching and an obstacle which can lead to an attitude of not caring. Why should I be good? Why should I help anyone but myself? Sure, I'm selfish. So what? When I'm here, I'm here. And when I'm gone forever. No rewards, no after effects. The study of theosophy will show men that selfishness, materialism, and individualism will lead to self-destruction and that the only true way to happiness is through the practice of altruism. This being translated into action from generation to generation will bring about a change in human nature. Then the noble goal of suffering renunciation shall be reached, and the ambition of men shall be to live among men, for men, with men, and through men, till at last the soul may enter upon other cycles and universes, having fulfilled its lower existence and having from man become God. In closing, we must preach. We must practice what we preach and make as far as we can the nucleus of a universal brotherhood of humanity with the United Lodge of Theosophists. Not only should we do this because the world is looking on, but also from a knowledge of the fact that by our steadfast unity, the smallest effort made by us will have tenfold the power of any obstacle before us or any opposition offered by the world. So once again, the topic for today, obstacles to the realization of unity.
Thank you very much. It's interesting. These are seed thoughts. And they need to germinate. And in the wintertime, that's what the seeds are doing. They're underground and all nature is thrilling in anticipation of the spring, as we're sure many of us are. But the obstacles are the weeds. But even the weeds flower briefly. But then they get in our way. And perhaps that's a metaphor for some of the lower desires. They seem to bring forth fruit, but it's poison fruit. We just wanted to read a very short quote here. 2/3 of the world's evil is due to man's inhumanity to man. The real source of evil is the reasoning man who dissociates himself from nature. God or deity, which is synonymous with nature. It is our wrong and separative ideas or thoughts which are the main cause of suffering of the world, because they form the basis of our speech and action. So Theosophy teaches the animal man to become the human man through works of charity, justice, and generosity, and done spontaneously. We think that that's really the key, to be of the mindset to perform actions that we deem need to be performed, and to do so with charity and in a spontaneous way, not to hold back. So we will open up the discussion at this time about the obstacles to unity. Anyone? MDW, unmute.
The obstacles to unity, are they the same obstacles to universal brotherhood? You know, that we have, or we've been told that there is a I think one principle on which unites us all. And what would that principle be?
Well, we're all united in spirit. all humans and all nature, for that matter, as Atma and Buddhi, spirit and spiritual soul, man as mind beings, as manas operative, at least partially, and the rest of nature has it in germ. So we're all connected on the spiritual plane, and we're all the same in essence and in potential. We all have the same potential ultimately, but we're held back by false ideas and our past actions, which have covered up this knowledge, which is innate. It's innate in us. It's, we need to bring it, we need to peel off the layers of the onion to bring it out. Yes, follow up.
Well, it seems that that the quality of the heart unites all of us. You know, that we seem that this is how we are connected by our feeling nature. We know that if we're around animals, they either are attracted to us or run from us. You know, and we were just wondering if our heart isn't set on accepting others as they are, does that become a roadblock to unity?
Most assuredly. If we don't unconditionally accept, and we just accept those that are like-minded, it's an impediment. It's a serious impediment. It's a major obstacle, because then we form little groups and teams, and it's us against them.
And we wondered too about the idea that the philosophy puts out, the sin of separateness, which basically we would guess like a heart, the heart quality could prevent. But if people don't realize that we're all spiritual beings, then the sin of separateness will separate us all and definitely be a blockage to unity, an obstacle.
Yes, the sin of separateness, which the Buddha had spoken about, is keeps us apart. It divides us, and since we're all one, we're also sinning against ourselves. We're complicating matters for ourselves as well as everyone else. And what we do in Philadelphia affects Ankara or Mumbai or Tasmania. We're all one, and these thoughts have a ripple effect throughout the world, good and bad, good, bad, and indifferent. We're taught about higher indifference. Generally, indifference is used in respect to not caring, but that's not what theosophy means by indifference. It's indifference to circumstances that we find ourselves in, not indifference to others. Indifference to our pain and our heartache and suffering, so that we can be there for others and be that heart quality again, to open up the heart. Did you? Okay, anyone else? So there are so many obstacles. We're surprised there's so many obstacles out there. Life is an obstacle course, in a sense, isn't it? We're always going around one obstacle or another, but sometimes the obstacle runs right over us. And we recently were speaking to someone who said that they were on the expressway and a car, they hit the brake, they didn't hit the person in front of them, and the person behind them hit the brake, and they were there in this zone where they felt protected. But then comes along a semi that clips a car and drags it down the road, and then they were involved in the accident too. So fortunately, they weren't hurt, and there was no loss of life, but we were thinking about that. We often think that we've dodged a bullet, as it were, only to find out that, well, then the other shoe drops. And but that's what all of life is about, learning. It's all about learning. We learn from our own experiences. We learn from others. We know that self-help groups, often people do learn from others' mistakes and experiences. They share their experience, strength, and hope, and it can help others to see where they're heading. It's a roadmap, as it were, because if we're blinded by any addiction, and addiction is a major obstacle. And so if we're, and there's many, many addictions, and it's an imbalance. It's a desire for a substance or a thing or a result, something that's going to give us an endorphin rush. And so we can learn from others. And that's what's so great about meeting in groups in person or meeting on Zoom. We can share our experiences. We can, without getting too personal, the impersonality has to be there, because if we're too personal, then we make it limited. So the impersonality is, we talk about great ideas, but we don't want to make it personal, because then that forms a separation there as well.
And could we not say as well that any attraction from any diversion from an outward source would be an obstacle to unity? And if we could have that impulse come from within, then that would be a plus for unity. But we think materialism, outside gods, that kind of thing, pride, anything of that nature that comes from an outward impulse, we think would be an obstacle to unity.
Well, hopefully we have inward impulses as well, that wanting to be of service is an inward impulse. But we do get stimuli, seen and unseen, felt and unfelt. We're swimming in this astral ocean of life, and all the thoughts and feelings, again, good, bad, or indifferent, are there. And we have attractions. We all have attractions. And but we have to always keep alert and awake and aware as much as we can, not to be asleep at the wheel. Yes, MDW, please unmute. Unmute, please.
Yes. Does the belief in an outside God, present an obstacle to our understanding of life? If we believe that our power is outside of us, do we see that most of life is focused outside of ourselves, and that everyone is clamoring to achieve some kind of material existence. But we see those cultures where an inward journey is actually advised, where meditation and quiet and inward retrospection into our existence helps us understand that there is nothing outside of us. It all lies within us. The only thing that we see is what distracts us.
Yes. Well, it could also be said, we've always thought the sin of separateness is related to our fellow humans and or the other kingdoms, but you got me thinking here, and that's a good thing. The sin of separateness, couldn't it be the outside God is also part of the sin of separateness? Because that is separate, to believe in an extra cosmic being that is really man-made, but is given all these attributes, especially the angry, vengeful, and jealous God of the Old Testament. And wouldn't that fall under the category of the sin of separateness? And isn't that a major obstacle? We would think so. Do you have a follow-up to that? Or not? Okay. Got a couple of chats here then. The first one is, for at least 100 years, the obsession in our society with materialism, creating a society where consumerism has become the new religion, especially since the old Christian churches have lost so much of their relevance and have become social movements rather than paths toward development of the soul, a major hindrance in people looking inward to see the inner light within each one of us. This distraction and obsession with the material world is like a loud noise that for so many blocks becoming, that process of becoming. That's, I think, a cogent observation there. The second one chat we have here is collectivism, group over individual, to be promoted instead of individualism, which emphasizes self-reliance? And we'll just read the next one. It says, can conditional acceptance of one lead to the neglect of others? So, okay, these are both from the same person, the same individual. So we'll look at this collectivism versus individualism, self-reliance, emphasizing self-reliance. Well, that's a whole discussion. So is it groupthink? Versus self-reliance. That's deep. Okay, yes.
Well, once man has free will, we have choices that we can make. And those are individual. But there's also the idea of universal brotherhood. So there can, it can be both. And we guess it should be both, because man has self-induced and self-devised means for his karma to move forward in other lives. But at the same time, our motive is that of a group, is towards the group, for universal brotherhood and for helping others and compassion. So we think it's a combination of both.
Anyone else want to comment on that? Yes, MDW?
Well, we see this collectivism and individualism playing out in the world today. We see countries that are collectively, you know, that idea is part of their mindset. And then we see other countries where individualism runs supreme. We would think that there would have to be a some kind of happy medium between the two, you know, socialism, communism, consumerism, you know, that all of these are means of discovering the self. You know, if one lived in a collective community where one was, you know, asked to participate equally within that community, you know, to provide different services. You know, we see in the United States it's an individualism, but we see a collective sacrifice. Otherwise, our commerce wouldn't work, or that our communications wouldn't work, that we are collectively, we communicate, you know, with a common purpose. So that really the purpose has to be identified, or the reason, you know, for our getting together. You know, we are born into families, and from there we, that's how we learn to participate in life. You know, family is a collective, you know, but it's, we know if we have, we've been raised in a family that we're also individuals, you know, that, I guess we're trying to say that there has to be a kind of a more or less a sacrifice of the individuality for the collective good. We even see that in the United States. There is a sacrifice being made by many for the collective good. You know, that's why many join the services, the armies or the navies or whatever. It's a kind of collective service to each other. So I'm rambling, so I'm just...
So you said a lot. We're thinking here, there are many isms and ologies out there, and they're many and varied. And most of them, though, are limited ideas. And with the theosophical movement, we have an aim, we have a purpose, we have a teaching. And unity is the first one for a reason. We are united in our aim, purpose, and teaching. So we have a roadmap, and there are many out there that have a piece of the roadmap, but theosophy is also religion, science, and philosophy. It's not that, like, that split, which is still very evident between religion and science and philosophy as well. If it's too intellectual, then it's cold and hard, and it tends toward, it tends downward. So we have to have the heart quality. Yes, JCS?
On the pages of the Gita, actually page 19, we read this statement. He who attendeth to the inclinations of the senses, in them hath a concern. From this concern is created passion, from passion anger, from anger is produced delusion, from delusion a loss of the memory, from the loss of memory, loss of discrimination, loss of all. The obstacles in life, in general, are akin to the obstacle to being centered in, to having the soul wisdom of unity, are probably embedded in this little statement. If we choose to be inclined to what we sense in the world, whether we're alone meditating in a quarantined home or whether we're out in the public in some kind of function, where we have concern, what we sense and we concern, that becomes the obstacle. Are we inclined to the physical and the psychic, the intellectual, or are we concerned with the spiritual and the higher psychic? And it's in the latter that we are one.
Thank you for the contribution. We have a follow-up. Collectivism and individualism are two opposing forces. They must be brought into balance, just like the forces in opposition in nature must balance, like polarities. This balance is what creates harmony. And that's so true. If we listen to an orchestra tuning up, it sounds horrible. But once they all get in tune and they make music, it's beautiful. It can be otherworldly. And it is a balancing of forces. If you're too far one way or the other, you're out of whack. And so, do we have any other chance here?
Number 2.
We didn't read that yet? Okay, we missed this one earlier. Can unconditional acceptance of one lead to the neglect of another? That's an interesting thought. Do we have to unconditionally accept everyone? Does that really promote harmony in the long run? We ask. MDW.
Well, we have to accept everyone. We don't have to accept their actions. We are all human to some degree, but we do not all act human to some degree. So that, we really have to accept everyone for what they are or where they are, but certainly don't have to accept the actions of everyone.
Yes.
And just because we've accepted another one doesn't necessarily mean that we have to neglect someone else, if we understand that right. But we have to realize with this comment, unconditional acceptance, is that each person is having to deal with their own karma as it comes to them, their duty. It comes to them, and however they react we think it's on us to understand that how that person is acting, their circumstances have to do with their karma. And we don't need to neglect anybody else because we're accepting someone and their condition because that person is going along with their karma and with their path to spiritual perfection. So everybody, we need to understand that they are spiritual beings and that karmically what is coming to them, because we just remember we had a friend who consistently was having all these issues with family members, and she kept saying, why is this happening? Why me? Why me? And it was her karma, and she had to learn how to deal with her family members, because it, you know, that was just the way her life was. That was her karma.
Yes, JCS.
Thank you.
It definitely is a balancing act, isn't it? To move through life in a stance that is not namby-pamby. We, as students, don't hold the position of I'm okay, you're okay, whatever goes, goes. There is a moral standard, but we hold that within our own behavior, and we work from that basis as best we can. But yet and still, we need to set standards and hold standards and be very clear to others about the eternal verities and what soul wisdom is. Just not, okay, it's your karma, it's all right, run with it.
Yes, and we need to meet that person where they are, in a sense. We need to have a common basis to form unity. That means not talking over somebody's head. If we perceive that they're a good, honest, but not perhaps sophisticated, which is fine, because really the word sophisticated isn't a compliment when you think about it. You know, it's really not. The sophists were, but that's a digression. So you meet people where they are on a common basis, and you go from there. You don't want to speak up or speak, but never speak down to somebody, ever. Speak from the heart. Don't speak down to anyone. That's just, it's not good. Now, as far as, you just want to read a short quote from Letters That Have Helped Me, by Mr. Judge, and this is related, we think. When the outside is pleasant, but the inside is false, then it is a hollow shell, and all the good magnetism is cut off. When the outside is rough, but the inside wishes to be right, there is sincerity, then the magnetism is not cut off, but a current in opposition is often raised, which engenders error and misconception and makes a big obstacle, though many friends arise who overlook it. So we think that's also related to the unconditional acceptance of others. We may personally really, we love somebody and we want to overlook their faults. And there's that unconditional acceptance. But we shouldn't accept the behavior. As much as we love someone, if their behavior is unacceptable, we're not doing ourselves or anyone any favor by letting it pass, by giving them a pass on it. But, and that takes a lot of courage, though, because we all want to be liked and loved and accepted. especially on Valentine's Day, right? So that's a very interesting observation Mr. Judge makes about magnetism. If it's, in a sense, the magnetism is strong if we're pleasant, you know, but if we're pleasant and sweet, if we have a pleasant and sweet feeling inside, it's strong. But if it's really a hollow shell, it doesn't work. And there are those that are rough, they have rough, gruff exteriors. They're very loving individuals, but they also have maybe a little bit of baggage as well. JCS?
Could you please share the page number of that, please?
I sure can. Letters That Have Helped Me, pages 176 and 177.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I discovered this from November 2020's Theosophical Movement that comes out of India. The lead article is called Theosophical Work. It's in the new volume 12, and it's the lead article on page 3, and it's just full of gems, and it's called Theosophical Work. Yes.
And one thing too that we were wondering about is when we do something positive, we are populating the astral with good impressions, which go out into the environment. And if we do negative things, have negative thoughts and feelings, it populates the astral negatively. And this could be an obstacle to unity as well. Whereas if we're doing it in a positive way, then we think it would be a positive effect on unity.
MDW, unmute.
We've always wondered that the idea of unity is really best understood in a family, especially between a mother and a child, that there is that unspoken unity. It's love, it's acceptance. But when that person passes on to the other realm or dies, is that link broken? Now we've heard many stories that link only can become stronger because there's no longer the obstacles of the physical to obstruct that love. You know, that it says that when those that we love pass on to the other realms, that they can still affect our lives because that love, you know, is a direct link to us. There's no obstacles that can block it, or that other than our own that we set up. So we often felt when our mother died, that we felt a great loss. But as we became more familiar with this philosophy, began to understand that all the things that they gave us, we carried in our heart. And that when we are in greatest of need, we turn to that. We turn to that for solace, for comfort, and for strength. So is death a barrier to unity?
Apparently not. The teachings, if love knows no bounds, and in the Devachanic state, that's where the state where only the highest thoughts and aspirations for the loved ones of the past life or fellow. For many, many years, for most, and for lifetimes, in a sense, the average time being 1,000 to 1,500 years. So we may have many mothers in the con simultaneously. Who knows? We never heard that mentioned. Who knows? Did you have a follow-up, MDW?
None other than the fact that our heart is when someone passes, it seems like it's broken. That we're missing a piece of our heart, and it seems that is just a misconception that we can never lose that love, that it's become a part of us and it's become who we are. So the unity of being a parent for our children, for the ones we love around us, doesn't that form a unity? Doesn't that begin to form a nucleus of brotherhood? It seems that would be the easiest place to start.
Yes, JCS.
And if that kind of experience is missed in childhood, as adults, we still have free will and choice to recreate what we would have loved to have enjoyed as children. And we also have another possibility to offset any obstacle to unity, and that is to take the love that we have in our homes or among our chosen family of friends and then transmute it, elevate it, lift it in the meditative state, in our aspiration state, to include every single soul on the face of the planet, to wish for them, each and every child, the kind of universal love and compassion that we would have had, could we, as children ourselves.
Yes, we like the bumper sticker. God bless everyone, no exceptions, or we're paraphrasing, but no exceptions. When we start making exceptions, we're putting on conditions, and conditions are obstacles. So that's what we need to meditate on, because it's the law, really. The law is unity. And we're violating the law if we're excluding anyone. Still have a little bit of time here. Well, we're thinking about this unconditional love. That's what the Masters of Wisdom have for us. They've already mastered it. They have it down. And they work behind the scenes, largely. And they people their current in space with love and compassion for the poor suffering humanity. Whether we're suffering materially, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, much suffering in the world. And so we have them as exemplars. We underline this: to a body of students that is not united, masters cannot give any help, and then our efforts will not bear fruit. On the other hand, if we practice what we preach and are united, then by our unity, the smallest effort made by us will have a tenfold power of any obstacle before us or any opposition offered by the world. And that was brought up in the forum talk, that same idea there. If we are united, the smallest effort will have tenfold power of any obstacle before us or any opposition offered by the world. So we can conquer these things. These obstacles are conquerable. They're not we think we need constant encouragement and reassurance, but that's what we need. And that's what we get by studying these teachings. They're just constant balm for the soul, never ending. Okay, well, we've reached the hour. We want to close now, and just to remind you that Wednesday, finishing up reincarnation, and Friday, we have our roundtable discussion from 5:15 to 7:15. And so have a good day, everyone, and bye.